This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu, it's Raise Your Game. I'm here today with Ong Eugene, who was here a few months back, which we were talking about his book, An Honest Look at Success. We're starting a series on the history of success, and today we're going to start off, you know, with the history of success. You know, for Ang Lee and J.K. Rowling, what are the real events that catapulted them from being virtual unknowns? Is talent and perseverance a guarantee to success? Now, the Joshua Bell Subway Experiment, can talent be easily identified, and will it always be given due recognition? So let's have a chat about this, Eugene. What was the story behind the Joshua Bell Subway Experiment?
Frida, thank you for having me. Now, Joshua Bell, I think if you were to look at a few years ago, you may have heard of this story and not
realize it was Joshua Bell.
Well, there were some emails being circulated around, so you probably may be familiar with the story. So apparently, this is a true story. As the story goes, is sometime in January 2007, in a subway platform in Washington, D.C., there was a violinist, and he stood alone, and he was performing for about 45 minutes. He played 6 Bach pieces. And because it was a very busy subway platform, at least 1,000 people walked by. Mm. Now, during that time, only a handful of people briefly stopped to listen to him before they hurried along. According to the accounts, no crowd gathered. And when he finished each piece, no applause was heard. It appears nobody cared. More than a dozen people dropped some money into his open violin case, so he just appeared to be one of those who were busking, you know, at the subway. And at the end of his performance, his collections totaled $32. So it was nothing spectacular.
Right.
But he was no street musician, because on that cold January morning, Joshua Bell was one of the world's best musicians, and he was playing on a violin worth $3.5 million. And the pieces that he played were some of the most intricate pieces ever composed.
Mm.
Now, just 2 days before, Bell performed in a Boston theater where the tickets costing an average of $100 were sold out. The idea of having Joshua Bell playing incognito, so, you know, a lot of people don't recognize him, they don't know who he is in a metro station, was part of a social experiment. So this social experiment was the idea of Washington Post, and they wanted to see how ordinary people would react. And in the words of Washington Post reporter Gene Weingarten, I quote, "No one knew it but the fiddler standing against a bare wall outside the metro in an indoor arcade at the top of the escalators was one of the finest classical musicians in the world, playing some of the most elegant music ever written on one of the most valuable violins ever made. And the question is, should it come as a surprise that his performance was met with indifference?"
Hmm.
So now, of course, if you were to assess the situation, okay, it's only fair to acknowledge that it was definitely not the most appropriate time and place for such a social experiment.
Mm, mm.
First, it was rush hour, so most people who walked past, they were on their way to work, they had other priorities, they're probably in a rush, so that's the reason why they didn't stop. Now, in addition, the audience at the Boston Theater, which he played 2 days ago, they definitely must be people who are appreciative of classical music. But the same cannot be said of those who are at the busy subway platform. So, of course, you have a lot of people, and they are a good mix from different segments of society, different people with different interests, and some people may not appreciate music or they may not appreciate classical music.
Mm.
But the question is this: would it have been different if the crowd had known that he was a renowned musician? The person who was performing is one of the top violinists in the world and not just any street musician, okay, any buskers. Does being famous matter? And could the crowd in the metro been able to differentiate between the performances of a world-class musician from that of just a good busker?
Mm.
So the outcome of this social experiment still poses an important hypothetical question. Do we recognize talent in an unexpected context?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, in my book, one of the questions which I pose is, are we even able to gauge or recognize talent in any context?
Right.
Okay, so it could be something like employers, you know, in the corporate context. Do employers recognize talents? And all employers, if you read the newspapers, they say they're looking for talent. They're always talking about talent. But who is a talent? What are the criteria? And if you set those criteria, are you objective enough to identify talent?
Right.
Because in this case, essentially, and of course, the outcome or the conclusion is very open-ended in the Joshua Bell social experiment is, you've got a guy who, if you know that he's that famous, you would have actually acknowledged that he's very talented, he's great.
Right.
Okay? But if you were to just put him in incognito, people don't recognize him, are they able to identify? And if you look at some real stories, so this is a social experiment, and in my book, I have a chapter where I wrote about a painting. And that painting is not a famous painting. It's called The Red Vineyard. So The Red Vineyard is an old painting which is displayed in the Moscow's Pushkin Museum of Fine Arts.
Mm-hmm.
So how this old painting came to be in the museum was after the Russian Revolution, the newly established communist regime had confiscated the art collection of a wealthy businessman, and this piece was one of them. Okay, so it's essentially nationalized. And so what's so great about this old painting, which is really relatively unknown? The significance of it is the creator or the painter of this piece of work has painted many, many famous works, including irises, a wheat field with cypresses, and the vase with 15 sunflowers. So we know who that is.
Yeah.
That's Vincent van Gogh. Okay, but if you look at the story of Vincent van Gogh, he committed suicide at the age of 37.
Right.
And his story is a very, very tragic story because throughout his adult life, he suffered from severe depression.
Right.
And we understand that depression was brought about by a series of rejections. So basically, you can say he's a failure. He's a failure by all accounts because when it comes to his love life, he was madly in love with a widow. And she refused to see him.
Right. And I guess this is where the point you were saying, you know, when you look at Van Gogh and Ang Lee, they were both famous men, right? And they had different destinies. I think they were both age 37, right?
Yes.
One had their big break at 37 and one the other was dead at 37, right? When you look at both Van Gogh and Ang Lee, right? So is it then perseverance or just luck or, you know, because I think also Ang Lee had his rejections too.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a very good question, because question is this. Now, Vincent van Gogh shot himself at age 37. Now, as what I've mentioned, the cause of it, what's believed to be the cause of it, is because he couldn't take it anymore. He couldn't persevere anymore. There was so much rejection that he took his own life. Now, during his adult life, until he committed suicide, he was a prolific artist and painter. So he left behind 2,000 pieces of work. Fortunately, no one destroyed it.
Right.
Okay, because it's actually worth a lot. And it's not that he did not display it. So they were in exhibitions in Paris and Brussels. But people were not able to recognize his talent.
Hmm.
They were not able to recognize his talent. And it was not that his art was so extreme. It's not like modern art, you know. It was something which he still managed to have them displayed in exhibition. But it was met with indifference. It was met with criticism, and like I say, out of that 2,000 pieces of art, there's only one old painting which was sold, and that was the Red Vineyard. That make it so special. And the sad thing is, in the case of Red Vineyard, the person who bought it was his friend's sister.
Mm.
And apparently his friend's sister was known to support struggling and poor artists. So in fact, if you were to read between the lines, it's not because you're good. But basically, someone feels sorry for you and they bought your painting. Now, had he persevered, okay, would he meet with success? So in the case of Ang Lee, his story is a little bit different. Now, he did arts, okay? He actually left Taiwan after his military service in 1979. He went to the United States to study art and he did a master's in fine art. And he was very sure of his talent. He was very self-confident of his talent. He was very sure of what he wanted. And during those years, he was unemployed. So again, you have your quintessential story of rags to riches. A person who is unemployed and he just persevered. Okay, so it's very similar to Vincent van Gogh, because Vincent van Gogh was unemployed. Ang Lee was also unemployed. And during those years, he fine-tuned his work, his screenplay, until the big break came when he submitted two screenplays in a competition. And that competition was a competition in Taiwan. Okay, it was actually a competition sponsored by Taiwan's Government Information Office, and that was in 1990. And his two screenplays, Pushing Hands and The Wedding Banquet, took the top two places. Now, of course, we're not sure how many competitors there are, because unlike in Western countries, you do not have that many Asians who actually spend a lot of time investing. Okay, investing in a career in screenplays and fine arts. And his big break was when he won, and there was a budding producer. So this chap was also starting off. His name is Lee Kong Soo, so obviously he's not as famous as Ang Lee. He liked his work. He liked Ang Lee's style. And of course, these things are very subjective. And what Lee Kong Soo did was he actually invited Lee to direct Pushing Hands as a full-length feature film. So both Pushing Hands, which made his debut in 1992, and also The Wedding Banquet, which was his second film, which was released in 1993. That was basically how he started with. Okay, and of course, that breakthrough in 1995 was when Ang Lee directed the British drama movie Sense and Sensibility. Because that was actually his first film, which was in English. Okay? Before that, it was in Mandarin. Now, of course, today, Ang Lee is one of the most famous directors. So, of course, if you look at Vincent Van Gogh and Ang Lee, yes, one persevered, okay? Both would have experienced a series of rejections. Had Vincent Van Gogh continued, would he meet with success? That's really hard to say. Really hard to say, because it was not 50 years later that his all paintings really took off. It was not. It was basically sometime after his death. So maybe if he persevered, or it could be that, you know, for all painters, it's only after your demise that people take notice.
Yeah.
Okay, but then the question also is this, Frida, is if you look at J.K. Rowling, Ang Lee, and Vincent Van Gogh, now, for you to persevere, that takes time. That takes time. And where do you find the time? If you, and Frida, you and I, we're holding a 9-to-5 job, okay, where do you find the time to explore your interest, explore your talent?
And we'll talk about that in just a moment. I'm here with Ong Eugene in our History of Success series. This is Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9. You're listening to Raise Your Game on Enterprise. Good morning. I'm Frida Liu. I'm here with Ong Eugene, author of the book An Honest Look at Success. It's our History of Success series. And today we're looking at the history of personal success. So, you know, earlier on, Eugene, you were talking about how time is a factor. Right now, this is a famous quote. I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work. And of course, Thomas Edison said that creating the electrical light bulb. Thank God for the 10,000 times. Otherwise, we'll be doing this in the dark. Now, why is time, you know, why is it also an essence, you know, for success?
Okay, well, I think first of all, Thomas Edison, his success is remarkable. And that quote is very widely used by motivational speakers to inspire their audience throughout the globe, because who would be crazy enough to carry on after the 9,999th attempt? I mean, of course, 10,000, it may be exaggerated. He must have spent a lot of time. He must have persevered. But the question is, where did he find the time?
Yeah.
So you need to look at basically the story. Now, of course, the moment you dramatize and you sensationalize a story of Thomas Edison for your personal success or self-help book, okay, you may neglect to actually emphasize his lucky break. So Thomas Edison, of course, his background had all the trappings of an inspiring story. He is one of seven children born to parents of humble means. And there was a time when he was selling candy, newspapers, and vegetables. But his two lucky breaks that would put him on the path to become an inventor. The first was he obtained a job as a telegraph operator. Now, I'm going to come to the time bit, okay, no, in a while. And apparently, as the story goes, it's from a man whose son he saved from being run over by a train. Maybe that's dramatized, okay? And as a telegraph operator, and you have to bear in mind, at that point in time, it is cutting-edge technology. It's not something which people take for granted. So the science behind this new technology intrigued him, and that's the reason why you see that some of his earlier inventions were related to telegraphy. And the second was Edison had the amazing good fortune of being acquainted to another inventor by the name of Frank Leonard Polk. So Frank Leonard Polk, he was Edison's mentor in his early years. Okay, so basically Edison learned from him. He actually got some of the ideas from him. And he also allowed Edison, as a struggling young man at that time, to live and work in the basement of his home. And Polk and Edison became partners and invented a one-wire telegraph in 1870. Now, even though their partnership did not last long, it allowed Edison to be acquainted with this technology and establish himself as an inventor. Now, more importantly, as an inventor, or rather having his first invention, which was the quadruplex telegraph, Edison sold that invention to the Western Union for $10,000, which at a point in time was a lot of money.
Yeah.
It was a lot of money. And that initial amount, okay, that initial invention and the proceeds of the sale from the invention allowed Edison the funds to build the first industrial research laboratory in history. And that was in Menlo Park, New Jersey. So he had the funds, he had the laboratory, because, you know, it's something which we take for granted. You know, you've got many laboratories in the 20th century. So that was basically his seed money. And of course, he persevered, definitely. But he did have his lucky break. And time is money.
Right.
And it's not only the case of Thomas Edison. It's also in the case of Ang Lee and Vincent van Gogh.
Right.
All those years while they persevered, they needed someone, because you have to remember, they were unemployed, to fund them, to allow them to persevere. And in the case of Ang Lee, it was his wife, Jane Lin. And of course, his wife is definitely not well known, but it was his wife which actually
provided the funds.
Provided for funds, and actually it is his wife who we can thank for all these amazing movies, amazing works that that Ang Lee has done. And of course, if you look at it, his wife must be truly remarkable, because coming from an Asian society, it must have been very difficult to support your husband.
Yeah.
Okay, and you have this chap, you know, I mean, I'm speaking for most Asian men. You know, if I was unemployed and I'm
until 37,
I would have been shown the door.
All right. I've been speaking to Ong Eugene, author of the book An Honest Look Success. This is our History of Success series. Today we looked at the history of personal success. Stay tuned again for another episode on the history of success next week. Race Again, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.